Today on the IVE Podcast, I welcome a few friends to the podcast to talk about the 2018 NBA offseason. We discussed the recent blockbuster trade of Kawhi Leonard being shipped up north to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan. We dive all into the angles, as well as our opinions about this, if Masai's reputation took a bit of a hit, how this might be a good move for DeMar. Plus, we discuss the winners and losers of the NBA offseason, and I break down my NBA Summer League experience. It was my first time going down to Vegas for that, so, you know, I had to discuss that. I had a great time. Shout out to Sunday for being the plug on that. Plus, we pay our respects to DeMar DeRozan's Raptors career. We pour out a little liquor. As always, South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen and subscribe to the latest episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher under the South Shore Ave name. So go ahead and subscribe to your podcast app and, you know, rate the shows too. 5 stars if possible. Bless your hearts. And as always, to listen to more podcast episodes and to catch up on my podcast catalog, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. NBA business, man. It's a cold, cold, cold world.
Whew. Welcome to the Av Podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Okay, so before I get into the rest of the offseason, as I mentioned before, a few weeks ago, I ended up heading to the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. You know, the first 4 days, the opening weekend of it, which is, to me personally, is the best time to go if you ever have the opportunity to go. So how this initially went down was a couple of years ago. A friend of mine was celebrating his 40th birthday, and he wanted to do something different. So, you know, he hit me up and said, yo, let's go to Vegas for Summer League. And, you know, the first thing I thought right away was, why the hell have I never thought about doing a boys trip to Vegas? Like, what the hell's wrong with me? Like, especially for Summer League. But ultimately, you know, I wasn't able to make it 2 years ago. So this time when the trip was coming together again, you know, there was no way this time I was missing out on it. We were about 9 or 10 deep heading down there to check out all the NBA rookies. You know, their first experience playing is something that's NBA sanctioned, of course. You get to see some second-year players and all the players looking to make an impact in this 12-day tournament that can get them an invite to NBA training camp or invite to teams in the G League, as well as overseas. Listen, there's not much else to say other than the fact that it was a great experience. And if you're a basketball junkie, you know, it's something I implore you to do at least once. So how it basically works is you buy your ticket. It's about, I think it's roughly about $40. And you get to watch up to about 10 games a day. And you can go back and forth between the Thomas and Mack Center in, at UNLV. Or you can go to the Connecting Gym, which is, I believe it's called the Cox Pavilion. So you can go back and forth between games. There's usually 2 games playing at a time, you know, usually most of the time. So you can always go back and forth between gyms and go watch whichever game. I like the feel of the Cox Pavilion a little bit better. It's a little bit smaller. It holds about maybe like 4,000 or 5,000, I think, at most. And it has more of like a high school feel. It's more intimate. You know, the players are a little more up close. And it's just, you know, everything is right there. So you kind of feel it a little more. Shout out to Jason for the original idea, you know, for bringing this up a couple of years ago. And now this boys trip is kind of turning into a semi-annual thing. And also shout out to Sunday for setting everything up and being the plug. You the real MVP. And shout out to Roy, Sko, Anthony, Billy, Floyd, as well as DJ Chris Nice as well. You know, we had a lot of fun and a lot of jokes. You know, hopefully we get to do this again in about a year or two. And just to explain it to you really quickly, my adventure literally started right when I got to the airport. So I won't mention his name as to who this happened to, but basically his boarding pass wouldn't print. and he got transferred from one line to another line and to another line. And by the time he finally got to the right person, you know, they gave away his ticket because he missed a cutoff point by 3 minutes. So he ended up missing his flight. So me, my man that missed his flight, and the other friend that was with us, we're all sitting there haggling, you know, with security and with the ticket booth to try to see if we can get another ticket. But while we're dealing with all of this and all the chaos that ensued from it, now the time is ticking because I still got to catch my flight. Now, as I explained in a previous podcast recently, I have a severe high ankle sprain, and my leg was, especially at that time, was still very much swollen from that. So I was in a walking boot, even though, you know, at that point I was able to kind of walk in and out of the boot at this point. But I had to pack it with me on this trip. So I'm trying to walk through to get through customs. And, you know, I have to say, as much as I hated the fact that I had to bring this walking boot with me, the positive part of it is that it was like having an all-access pass. Every line I went into, I got the VIP superstar treatment. I got the velvet rope treatment. I'm basically getting every line bypass. I'm being put through every priority line. It was amazing. Like, I ended up making my flight with about 5 minutes to spare. And I'm telling you right now, there's no way in hell I'm making that flight without all the escorting. No way. And on top of that, I get my aisle seat, so I'm good to go. As for my friends who missed their flight, listen, man, you know, it all ended up on a positive note. They had to take a later flight that day. I think it connected them to Calgary and then sent them from Calgary to Vegas. But throughout that whole time, they got upgraded to business class, had the first class treatment all the way to Vegas. So I don't really feel that sorry for them, you know, for their kiosk mishap. So we get there now, we check our bags, we get something to eat, and we head down to the Thomas and Mack Center where the Summer League games are being played. So there's a few things I'll take, you know, that I take away from this experience. Number one, it's hot as fuck in Vegas. Now I know it's hot in the summertime, so, or at least I've been told, because I've never been there in the summer, but it's that ungodly desert heat, man. Like, I wasn't surprised about it during the day, so I don't want to act like I'm a novice to this, but when we went to Walgreens on the strip after midnight to go get snacks for our rooms and everything and get some water bottles and such, I swear to God, it might have gotten even hotter. And it made no sense. It was about 38 degrees, literally the entire day. It never cooled down at any point. I mean, between the heat, the walking around in the boot literally all day long, I actually checked my phone and I took about close to 20,000 steps that day. Listen, man, by the time I got to my room, I never slept harder and faster in my life. And when I woke up in the morning, my right hip was like in ridiculous pain. And yes, Sunday, yes, if you're listening, I blame you for some of that. Yes, I'm throwing you under the bus. Number two, the NBA is fantastic in terms of how well everything's put together, just in regarding the league. And just in terms of how all the players that are there, just current players or retired players, are just walking around, mingling, networking, you know, just all of that. It's crazy. I lost kind of the amount of players and people that I saw walking around in the arena, people that I recognized from like Elton Brand and Kemba Mutombo, just for starters. The media people like Stephen A. Smith, Doris Burke, Amin El Hassan, you know, and just some of the NBA stars that were there as well. The way it's set up, as far as I understand, the first weekend of the NBA Summer League, that first weekend, the opening weekend, is like the NBA headquarters. Everybody's there. Managers, general managers, coaches, execs, front office people, owners, players, everybody's just hanging out. It's a cool experience. Plus, it's Vegas, so there's everything ties together. At the same time, it's just such big business over there that it's just unreal. And I know I'm mentioning guys like Elton Brand and Dikembe Mutombo. I saw Anthony Parker there. I mean, honestly, those are some of the names I can think of off the top of my head. But honestly, there was just so many different players and stars that were there that I honestly lost track. Number three, the Laker fans are loyal as hell, and they travel. As far as I know, it's only a 3 to 4 hour drive from from LA to Vegas. So they traveled in droves to watch these Summer League Laker games. The first game that I saw I saw them play against Philly on the Saturday. Philly had their new rookie, Zaire Smith, as well as Furkan Korkmaz. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Their 2016 first rounder. I think he was drafted like the 26th pick of the 2016 draft. The night before, this guy against Boston, he looked like Steph Curry. This guy dropped about 40 points and was just raining threes in the second half from everywhere. He must have hit at least 7 or 8. And the Thomas and Mack, they're going crazy during that game. But on Saturday night, it was packed. It was like, it almost felt like a playoff game. It was crazy. And one of the funniest parts was, I think about the second quarter, all of a sudden you just hear just a humongous roar from the crowd. And, you know, and you're looking over and you're like, man, did Magic come through? Is Magic Johnson there? You know, because you see so much stars, you figure, okay, maybe he's walking through the crowd and, you know, and or maybe his voice is on the Jumbotron or something. And then when I took a good look, it's JaVale McGee. Yo, the crowd was going insane for JaVale McGee. Like, they were losing their minds. Like, it was almost like Magic Johnson really was walking through the crowd. But right there, I was just like, wow, that Laker loyalty, it's unreal. Because for them to go as crazy as they did for JaVale McGee, I thought it was hilarious. And honestly, just as a whole, just the amount of people just walking around and just, you know, like just walking around the concourse of the arena and just, you know, down below by the courts and everything else was just crazy. One of the best images I saw was Jerry West. He walked in and he got the God treatment from everyone. Everybody came to basically kiss the ring. And then he goes courtside and he sits with Mark Cuban. And about maybe like 5-10 minutes later, here comes Steve Ballmer, and he comes and joins them. And the three of them are just talking, you know, taking part of the game. And I think that was during the Dallas and Phoenix game that was being played. And I even took a picture of it just because in my mind, I was just like, yo, I was telling some of the guys that was with me. I'm like, just the amount of money and power that's sitting in between those three seats is ridiculous. But in some ways, looking in the stands, like, it just felt like you're watching basketball cards coming to life. Like, you know, one of the guys that was there, Billy, he kept pointing out all the stars, basically. Like, every time you look, he's like, hey, that's so-and-so. And you took a look, you're like, oh, shit, that is Mutombo. You're like, there's Kyle Kuzma. There's this one. It's crazy. It's crazy. The fourth thing is the games. Now, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to act like these games are super amazing to watch. Some of these games they're sloppy and sometimes they're dead. They lack execution at times, you know, but again, it's expected. It's summer league. So the overall quality of the play was okay and uneven in some cases and entertaining in others. But for example, like when Detroit played Memphis, that game was hella entertaining. and Jaren Jackson Jr. looks like the real deal. He looked really good. He had a sequence towards the end of the game where I think he got about 4 blocks in about 2 minutes. He had 2 chase down blocks. The first one, he ended up basically in the stands with all the journalists. Like, by the time, you know, like, he blocked the shot, he ended up flying into the crowd. Then he hustled all the way back and tried to fight for the offensive rebound. They went right back down the court again. He got another block. So the crowd at this point was going crazy. Yeah, he looked really good. And some of the other rookies and the players that impressed me in the games that I saw personally, outside of Jaren Jackson, of course, was Kevin Knox when he played against Atlanta. He looked really good. I'm really a fan of Alonzo Trier. I believe he played for Arizona. I know he got those suspensions and everything else, and I don't know how his career is going to turn out. But, I mean, I can see him making the Knicks roster this going into this season. If he didn't get suspended, I don't know, you know, we're on the mock draft board he was under, but he looked like a first-round pick to me when I saw him play this year. There was also Jabari Bird on the Celtics. I saw about 3 of their games. He looked good in pretty much every one of them. Sean Dawson on the Brooklyn Nets. Jonathan Isaacs on Orlando. I can't say the same about Mo Bamba. Mo Bamba, there was a major buzz going into that game, I believe when they're about to play Brooklyn. And with about 30 seconds in the game, you're like, oh, yeah, this kid's a project. It's going to take a while for this kid to get good. So we'll see what happens with him. But he looked very, 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 very raw. But again, which is expected. Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton on Phoenix, they both look good. Mikal Bridges' arms looks like tree limbs, like long tree limbs. It's freakishly long. It just, even from the stands, it just looks weird how long his arms are. And DeAndre Ayton, I think, is going to be a solid player. I mean, he's 19 years old, so there's you know, he's far from his from reaching his potential right now. One of the things about Summer League, though, is when you're a big man, if you don't have like a good guard giving you the ball, man, you can look terrible at times. And it has nothing to do with Ayton. A lot of times, I could honestly say I was watching him play the Sacramento Kings, and they're playing against Marvin Bagley. That was like pretty much like the big game of that Saturday. And it turned out to be the worst game because it was just a kind of like a sloppy game. But one of the funny things that happened in it was the amount of times that these guards couldn't give Ayton a entry pass. I was flabbergasted by it. Like, honestly, if there was, for every 10 entry passes, he might have gotten 2 clean passes. Like, it was ridiculous. Some of it was his fault because he didn't seal his man properly. But I would say about 80% of the time, he just could not get a pass thrown properly to him. Like, it was nonsense. And it's funny. I look back at the stats today, and I saw he got 21-12. And honestly, I don't even know how he did that. Colin Sexton is another player. He's going to be a solid point guard for the Cavs. And they really got a tenacious one. I think he's going to be a good NBA player. Josh Hart, of course, obviously, you know, he won the MVP of the Summer League. You know, one of the things you look for, you know, from the second year guys is you just want to see them, like, when they're, you know, playing in the Summer League for the second year in a row, you want to see some sort of elevation. So you kind of want to see them be like head and shoulders above the rest of the field. So you saw that from him, which was impressive. Yeah, Dennis Smith Jr., which was a shock to pretty much everybody. I don't think a lot of people knew he was even playing. You know, we weren't expecting Doncic to play, but I know for a fact, not a lot of people knew Dennis Smith Jr. was playing. Dennis Smith Jr. looked really good, even though he had about 4 airball threes in the first half, but he still looked head and shoulders above everybody else. But, you know, and then Trae Young, he had his struggles. Excuse me. He had his struggles, but he looked pretty good in that Knicks game. I only caught a piece of the second quarter and most of the second half. So he didn't really do as well in the second half, but you know, he has some good qualities about him, you know, and it's going to take some time. Again, he's 19 years old. He's slight. You got to temper your expectations a little bit with him. Don't think, I know he was the 5th pick, but don't think he's going to come in and just set the league on fire. I mean, if he does, great, but I'm expecting it for him to have a bit of a slow burn. You know, it's going to take him a little bit of time to get it together. But the guys that I was that I walked away from being really impressed with in the Summer League was 2 guys in particular. Miles Bridges on the Hornets and Wendell Carter on Chicago. I think Wendell Carter is going to be really good, man, once he catches his sea legs. Like, I like what Chicago's doing. I like the fact that they picked up Jabari Parker. Another year of Lauri Markkanen in there. Chris Dunn is there. They re-signed Zach LaVine. You know, I think, you know, they're trending in the right places right now. But I really think Wendell Carter I know he was a 7th overall pick, but I feel like he's a little under the radar. Like, that kid impressed me, man. And the post has seemed easy for him. He's strong. He even stepped back a couple of times and made some threes. He looked really good. And Miles Bridges, obviously he's going into his rookie year, but he looked like he didn't belong physically. Skill wise, he looked like he didn't belong in that game that he was playing against. I think it was Denver, or I forgot who he was playing against, but he looked like he didn't belong in that game. Like, he looked like he should have been just watching that game because he was that much better to me than everybody else on the floor. I think Charlotte, you know, Charlotte usually butchers these draft picks half of the time. But I don't know. I think this kid is going to be running for rookie of the year if he can get his proper shots or proper chances, I should say. You know, I know Kemba Walker is there and everything else, but I really think that kid's a real keeper. Like, he looked ready to go like right now. But like I said, you know, I was mentioning about Mo Bamba, about Trae Young and how they struggled. You know, even OG Anunoby, I was only able to catch 1 Raptor game, but he struggled. Like, he didn't look good at all in the game that I saw. But, you know, that doesn't change my mind on him. I think the sky's the limit for him. And even with the struggles, even with the successes of a lot of these players, again, it's summer league. So you can't be completely blown away with anybody or be completely down on anyone. The summer is for these guys. You know, you still got to work on your game. You still have to evolve in some ways when it comes to training. It's going to take time for some of these players to get it together. But for some of these rookies, like I said, they look good. There's a lot of rookies that look good. I don't think Sean Dawson is a rookie on the Brooklyn Nets, but he had a good game against Orlando that day. And Ken Birch as well. Shout out to Ken Birch. He had a nice game too. I missed Sunday. I didn't get the chance to see the games on Sunday because I had to sneak out to Cali and watch one of my friends get married, which was great, and I was glad I was able to go. Shout out to Joel and Kid for inviting me. And shout out to Julian and Ryan, as well as the rest of the wedding party, for doing a great job holding them down. And props to Ryan for winning the shoe game, man. This guy came through with the Supreme Wallabies. Like, we had no chance. We had no chance. We bow down. All right, well, that's the extent of my story from the weekend, you know, and my summer league experience. I'll definitely be back at it, you know, whether it's an annual or semi-annual trip at worst. You know, great time for the weekend. It's definitely one for the books. With that said, let's move on to the rest of the NBA offseason. So next up, we got my friends of the podcast, Randall Walter and Headley, coming on to discuss the Kawhi Leonard and DeMar DeRozan trade and break down the winners and losers of the NBA offseason. And before we start that up, just to let you know, season 3 of the Stoop and Mini Podcast Summer Series will begin during the first week of August. Make sure you stay locked into that. The premiere episode should be really good. It's going to be like a story time / trip down memory lane about a boys trip that I had back in my university days. So I'll leave it at that. It should be a lot of fun. I'm looking very forward to this episode. I believe we're going to be recording it next week. Anyways, let's start off the section of this podcast. All right, let's go. So in the past month, there's one thing about the NBA that now it's been officially proven as a fact. The NBA offseason is fucking fantastic. So between LeBron James heading to the Lakers, Paul George staying with Westbrook and OKC, Boogie Cousins throwing up both middle fingers to the NBA and signing with the Warriors, it's just been a whirlwind of action. But nothing rocked the NBA world more than the latest trade that happened this week between the San Antonio Spurs and the Toronto Raptors. So in a blockbuster deal that, for those that are listening that's completely unaware, the Spurs finally traded Kawhi Leonard, as well as Danny Green, to the Toronto Raptors for DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a protected first rounder in next year's draft. Now, before I go any further, let me quickly introduce the friends of the podcast here and of South Shore Ave. Before we get started, I'd like to welcome back Headley, as well as Randall Walter, head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU program, and more importantly, COO of Team Lightskin. How you doing, fellas?
Good, yo.
Yes, sir.
So
now we back.
Now, before we get into the rest of the offseason discussing the winners and losers, you know, of the offseason so far, I'll ask a question. What were your initial thoughts when this trade went down? So, Randall, I'll start with you first.
I had a feeling you were going to start with me. Well, to be honest, I think there's two sides of this. You know, there's the emotional side and the rational side. Mm-hmm. You know, the emotional side of me initially was a little, I won't say upset, I was a little confused and shocked. It took me a while to process DeMar actually not going to be in a Raptor jersey. And you automatically look at the risks and the negatives rather than the opportunities. And, you know, initially I just thought Lowry and Kawhi together, I didn't think that was a great match. And I didn't know exactly what the deal entailed initially. Mm-hmm. So when you have I assumed that it wouldn't be, it'd be like an asset like either Siakam or OG or both. Yeah. But after the dust settled, you know, the rational side kicked in, and I don't mind the deal. You know, I do feel a little, you know, I pay all respects to DeRozan because I think he's done a great job helping the organization get to where it had to go. But if I was in, you know, I put myself in Masai's position, I think I would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, essentially at the end of the day, you know, Total, DeRozan, and a protected first round pick. I think it's 1 to 20, and it falls to 2 second rounds next year or this year, whatever it entails. But I, you know, for me at this point, we didn't lose any major assets of our young core. Mm-hmm. I know the risks of Kawhi, you know, leaving after 1 year, but you know, at this point, you have to gamble on it. And to be honest, I don't think everyone, you know, I hear it, like, it's all over the news, right? Everyone's talking about it. You know, if this fails, what happens? But you want to know the honest truth? If it does fail, you still have a decent core intact to grow. And you still have the cap space with Larry and Ibaka falling off. I won't say do a hardcore reset, but do a reset will get you back into relevance.
So let me put a disclaimer out. This is nothing personal against DeRozan. I think he's an all-time Raptor. This hasn't been a all-star to rep the city as hard as DeMar DeRozan. So let me just state that right off the bat.
Okay.
Two, I would have preferred it with Lowry, but this is my initial thought when it was Didi. First thing I wanted to find out who was involved. Because before I was hearing, as Ryan was talking about, I'm hearing about OG, I'm hearing about Pascal, I'm hearing about all these other assets, multiple draft picks, and I was going, hell no, that's just, it's too much.
Right.
Then when I found out afterwards, it was for Didi, Yakum, and a first round pick, I was like, okay. I was fine with who we have as the younger youngster that was going. Between the guys who were still on the rookie contract, between him, OG, Pascal, and DeLon Wright.
And Van Vliet.
Yeah, but Van Vliet, we had signed back, right? He couldn't leave. But obviously Van Vliet is another youngster. But between the guys who are still under rookie contract, I was fine with it. DeLon, if he would have left, I would have been maybe happier just because we're a little bit more deep in point guards, but however, I was fine with it. Then when I found out about the protection, that was 1 through 20. And then, not 1 through 20 this year, and then for the next several years, it's this year only, and then after it's two seconds. What I love about this is because people are like, okay, it's a one-year rental, but then you don't realize that we could still, if this is not working out, we can still trade them come February trade deadline. We can still do a sign-and-trade because after reading the rules, a sign-and-trade, even though there's been some changes, it works ideal. It works in this situation with L.A. And the reason why San Antonio didn't deal with him to L.A. directly was they didn't want to improve another team in the Western Conference, especially at L.A. And two, they were not going to take Deng's contract. If Kawhi decides to leave, we're on a quasi-reset, as Ryan was talking about. We will take Den's contract under 1 year, and then I'm pretty sure L.A. will give us some young assets because in that situation, they'll be able to get Leonard and another max player. So they'll be able to sign 3 max players, including LeBron, as opposed to just 2. Once you break it down, and think of it, and if we do trade him in the February deadline, chances are Raptors is not going to be a top 10 team anymore. So we're going to keep that first round pick in 2019 anyways. So who are we really giving away? Yakum. You know how we got him? When Bagnani was traded to the New York Knicks and we fleeced him for a pick, we got the number 9 pick for that. And we were trying for a while to trade that pick in order to get an upgrade in players. So we basically gave away a pick that we basically got for nothing, and a first round pick that chances are if we do decide to trade him ain't gonna get converted. So what at the end of the day is we gave away DeRozan, who was owed like $83 million over the next 3 years, who had his limitations, and we've seen that we cannot. And that's the problem, is we get emotional. Toronto gets emotional with their fans, with their players, because of the way he ride hard for him, but 3 months ago, man, it was tough to watch this team again. You know what I mean? And you don't fire the coach of the year and then come back with the same team. I honestly, in my honest opinion, I think Lowry is out before the end of this summer, if possible, because they just signed Brown, who was I think he was D League Player of the Year off the D League this year. So we got four point guards. You don't sign up for four point guards unless you're thinking about shipping one. And we just re-signed Van Fleet, so he can't go nowhere. And
or two.
Pardon?
Or two.
Or two. But I honestly think that Lowry is going to be gone sometime soon. And the other thing, everybody's talking about Quan, he isn't motivated by cash. But he already left a $230 million contract off the table by him forcing himself out of San Antonio. Now, if he decides to sign with LA outright, he can only sign for $140 as opposed to signing for $190 if we do a sign and trade. So you're talking about him. He's already left $40 million off on the table, and now you expect him to leave another $50 million on the table. So he's going to forego $90 million tax-free when you think about him being in Texas to go sign in L.A. You know what I mean? Even if he can make some of it back, he's not going to make all of it back. His team is going to make sure that if for whatever reason he's not staying in Toronto, if he doesn't fall around and fall in love with it like Paul George, he's going to make sure that he gets paid. And that would mean L.A.
on the sign and trade.
Get doing some kind of deal. So after when you start breaking it down, it's not as bad. It's actually a pretty great deal to get a top, like when healthy, he's a top three player.
Yeah.
Top five at worst.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, to get somebody like that in their prime doesn't happen all the time. So little by little, I love it. I really do. Mm-hmm. It's a gamble. It is a little ballsy, but fuck. That's what you want from a GM.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not like he gave the core an opportunity to do it on their own. He gave them a chance. And you knew last year, I thought it was going to happen last year, and he's like, okay, you know, he gave some harsh words and be like, you guys need to change your ish up. Yes, they did win 59 games, but the end result was still the same. And he's like, enough's enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything Epley said, I'm on board for. I mean, listen, I've been listening to all media outlets the last week, and it's funny to hear the perception of this trade south of the border, because I'm feeling that the pressure essentially now is falling on to Masai and Nick Nurse, right? Mm-hmm. Because you know, a lot of people, they're saying, well, why don't you keep the band together? I mean, your only Achilles heel was LeBron James. Well, I mean, for us who watch the Raptors year in, year out, we know that this band is not a championship caliber team. And, I mean, there's no sure shot to get this team, even with Kawhi, to the finals. But it's a damn better team on paper.
I remember, especially you. We all said, like, this was last year was Toronto's window, because we knew Boston was going to get better and we knew Philly was going to get better. And you sense in the way that the season ended with Cleveland, they were downward spiraling. So, like, if there was a chance for this team to make it to the finals, it was this year, because with Kyrie and Howard back up to 100%, and then Philly, every year, Philly just naturally progressing, getting better with time and age. You knew that the window on the Raptors was closing. So, yeah, the Achilles heels for years had been LeBron. But even with LeBron out, with the rise of Sixers and the Celtics, it didn't make me feel any better. Like, all of a sudden, now we have an easy path to the finals. Not at all.
Well, you know what? That's something I've echoed in previous podcasts, including the playoff preview podcast that me and you did, Randall. I said this exact same thing. I'm like, this is the window. I'm like, if you can't do it now, you know, like, what are we here for? But I'll share my initial thoughts about when this trade went down. I mean, and I didn't like it at first because couple of reasons. Number one, like everybody else, I didn't know the details of who was going out. Like, I figured for sure Siakam or OG or both, like both of you guys. I thought both of them, or at least one of those two, were gone, as well as DeRozan and whoever else. And then the other part of it too, I'm not into getting rentals that aren't open to staying in Toronto, especially. I just feel like it's really risky. But with that said, like, you know, obviously we know the details of what might happen if he leaves. You know, you especially with OG and Siakam both going the other way, you figure for sure like the cupboard is going to be more bare than it was before. So the fact that they're able to keep both those guys in this deal, I was pretty impressed. Because right away, like, the immediate vision I had was Kawhi, OG, and Siakam, like a defensive lineup on that side of the floor. And that, like, right there gave me a little bit of goosebumps. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I know throughout this whole year I've been shouting OG's praises on his podcast about how much I like him. I've been a fan of his since his that freshman year that he had in Indiana. And in some ways, to me, like, he kind of reminds me in similar ways of Kawhi when Kawhi first came out of college. Like, especially defensively, like, there's some similarities there. So having someone like OG be around Kawhi and watching him every day in practice, I think is going to be exponentially grateful for him. So as bad as it is to lose somebody who literally embraced the city, who took ownership of Toronto, like no NBA star before him, in the short term, of course, this is an upgrade. If you're upgrading essentially from DD to a healthy Kawhi, if he's healthy, that alone is an upgrade. You know what I mean? I'm not sure if they're going to win 59 games, because as much as we know, we like to throw that they won 59 games out, Kyrie missed a few games. So there's certain things that kind of played into that a little bit too, right? But with that said, a healthy Kawhi is an absolutely phenomenal player. And I'm always the guy that always, like, as an example, always resort to game one of the Western Conference Finals against Golden State last year, where he basically dismantled Golden State on both sides of the floor. Like, it was one of the best things I've ever seen watching basketball. It was incredible watching a guy, especially defensively, just completely tear apart an offensive scheme, especially one as great as the Warriors. Like, it was impressive. And I they wouldn't have won the series, but just watching that was amazing. And then I was reminded of something, and Hedley, you're gonna remember this. So I was reminded of like something that happened about 5 years ago. So about 5 years ago, I was at work. This is probably before South Sharav started, or right around the time I started South Sharav. And I was in the cafeteria at my workplace eating lunch. And on the ticker, they had the CP24. CP24 was on the TV, and, you know, they have the little ticker going by. And just in passing on the ticker, it showed MLSC signed Tim Leiweke, you know, to basically run the operations of, you know, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. And I swear, it took everything in me not to spray people in the cafeteria with water and juice, like how you would, like, when you win a championship in the locker room. The only person that was probably as excited as me was Hedley, if you remember. You remember that?
Of course, man.
Yeah, me and you both were, like, going crazy. While everybody else was like, who's this Leiweke guy? We were like, oh, my God, like, this is crazy. Like, we got to steal. Cause if you look at that guy's portfolio, everything that he does constitutes winning and winning championships. He's basically like, we're going to play hard. We're going to play hard or we're going home. Like, we're not leaving no stone unturned. We're trying to win championships with whatever league that he was involved with. So when he signed Masai later that summer, that was the sentiment both of those guys were echoing. So when I think about that, thinking about like how I felt when they signed Leiweke and they signed Masai, and thinking about it now, I'm actually okay with the trade. Like, I'm begrudgingly okay with the trade, right? So, but I can't ignore how bad everything imploded in San Antonio. I'm putting myself in, like, put yourself in Kawhi's shoes for a quick minute. Like, you had the best organization in the NBA. They're like the Patriots of basketball. They're the best organization in the 21st century. Like, I don't think anybody can dispute that. Plus, you had the best coach who saw something in you that literally no one else saw. He took the time to help you mold your talent. He transitioned the torch over from Duncan and, you know, Ginobili and Parker. He had to implore you, almost beg you on many occasions to become more of a scorer. He literally built the entire franchise around you. You couple that with the fact that that coach is beloved by so many players across the league. Like, even when Popovich's wife died, the amount of players that came to support him across the league was crazy, including Kevin Durant himself. And to watch things implode to the extent that it did, where you're not even returning texts or calls for weeks at a time from Popovich, which also includes your management and your organization, over a misdiagnosis. Listen, people in the organization still have no idea why things fell apart the way they did, including Danny Green. I'm waiting for one day for them to, for like a 30 for 30 or some sort of like investigative story on this in the next year or two. It's going to eventually come out. It's going to have to. But why would he leave the best organization in the NBA? Like, it's almost similar to like that blonde running away from Jason in the woods. Like, I want to know why. And that's one of the questions. If I'm a Psy, I have to ask, like, why were you available? Why are you in Toronto? Like, why were we able to get you? To me, it's almost like, as much of it is an upgrade in the short term, and we know all the riskiness of it all, like, to me, it's kind of like a red flag. It almost comes off as sketchy, just the way that Kawhi and his people handled that whole situation. Like, this guy didn't even come to playoff games. Like, no, not even his teammates know what happened. Like, nobody knows what happened, you know? And it's not like he was like a role player or maybe one of the best players. Like, this is like the face of the best organization in the NBA. I understand that the Raptors got the best player in the deal, and in almost every circumstance, you ride with that and you just keep it moving. But this particular situation with Kawhi is so unique. It honestly, it gives me great pause. Because especially when you throw in the stance of somebody that wanted no parts of coming here. So, like I said, I'm okay with the deal, but, like, there's great hesitation on my part.
You touched on something what a lot of people haven't really talked about, even though, obviously, he's thrown in for salary purposes. Danny Green is an extremely good three-point shooter and defensive player. So when you talk about a defensive scheme or a defensive lineup, yo, throwing in Danny Green there is not—it's not no small fry.
Oh, of course.
And I mean, yeah, it might be just for 1 year, but who knows if he decides to re-up? If how that marriage is going to be? He's always been a complete professional. That Danny Green throwing is actually pretty exceptional when you think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, even on a one-year rental, too, because you don't know
what's exactly going to
happen, you know. But I agree. I think Danny Green fits in Nick Nurse's plans. I mean, you have a versatile 3-and-D wing whose percentage from the corner is in the mid-40s for the three. And like Kedley said, you know, he's a cohesive unit. Like, he can fit into any type of atmosphere. He's seems to be a great locker room guy in all types of purposes. He seems to be one of the only people on San Antonio's roster that really got along with Kawhi. So that's what the reports are saying.
Okay.
So I think right now, you know, the Raptors, the question that comes into play, you know, with this whole trade, and I'd like to ask this to both of you, is does this team, the way it's composed right now, we all know that they can contend, but are they right now on paper the best team in the Eastern Conference?
I would say no, but I still ride with Boston, but I think it's the gap is a lot closer. Because really, like, let's look at it like this. The Atlantic division has now become the best division in the league. Yeah, it's the Eastern Conference, but the three top teams in the Eastern Conference are all in the same division. So that alone, I think if you're trying to win your division, much less a championship, and you want to compete, you got to compete with Philly and you got to compete with Boston. I think where Philly becomes a super team is that whole situation with Markelle Fultz has to get figured out. That's number one. Like, I think they go from like a really interesting team to a super team if he hits on his level, especially if he finds his jump shot. Lord knows what happened to that. That's another podcast, I guess. But with Boston, this deal now, like I said, I still think Boston is the best team on paper. But I think defensively, this is probably in this conference, this is going to be Boston's greatest obstacle, because as great as Kyrie Irving is, you know, we know Gordon Hayward's coming back and he's a solid player. He's a really good player. there's nothing defensively like Kawhi Leonard, man. So him, OG, Danny Green, you know, Siakam, you know, whatever you can get from Ibaka, even Lowry, if Lowry gets motivated, inspired, if he's staying, just defensively, that alone is going to cause major problems for Boston. Boston's still the number one team, but I think that alone, that move alone is like the biggest threat to Boston making the finals. Because I actually think Boston is like, I think Boston is the biggest threat to Golden State. Like going, at least on paper, going into this season. Who knows what other moves are going to be made? Because I think Houston kind of dipped just a little bit. I think last year, I don't even know how they won 65 games, Randall. Like, I still don't understand how that even happened. But with that said, they lost Richard Mabute. They lost Trevor Ariza, which those guys played their roles incredible. And you're replacing that with a guy that, you know, most likely from all reports, Carmelo Anthony's coming there. You don't know, you know, obviously defensively, he's not going to give you the same kind of effort. So right there, they kind of lose it a little bit. They most likely will get Clint Capella back. We'll see what happens there. But to me, Boston is the biggest threat to Golden State right now. And I think now the Raptors are the biggest threat to Boston getting to the finals. So I guess to answer your question, I still say Boston is the best team, but the Raptors are going to be for real now, especially if Kawhi's motivated and inspired.
So let me just say off the bat, ain't nobody beating Golden State still. Now, if they can get anything out of DeMarcus Cousins this year, and if he's ready for playoff time, everybody's playing for second. So that still hasn't changed. Now, when it comes to the East, you know, some people who doesn't take all elements would say, you know, well, Toronto won 59 games last year. They were number one team in the East. They got Leonard, and obviously they're going to top 60. Which is funny enough, projections do have them at like 61, 62 games wins next year.
Okay.
However, it's not so clean and dry. Injuries plays a lot in this. Between, if we knew for a fact we were getting Leonard, who did 25-5-3 with 1.8 steals from the 2016-2017 team, I'd be like, yo, this team's going to be a beast. But we really don't know, with just 9 games played, what exactly we're getting. And that's part of the reason why this was, we got him too, because there was some risk involved as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, all that talks where people are saying that, oh, he's going to sit out the season. I was like, there's no effing way.
No,
it's not. After he played just 9 games, that it's one thing to say that money doesn't motivate him, but even LA Lakers are not going to pay him money if he hasn't played 2 years.
Exactly.
Like, let's be real.
Nobody's giving
him
max. He has
to showcase himself.
Nobody's giving him max for that. Like,
exactly. Yeah. That wasn't happening. But as you say, injuries. We have Leonard. Boston has Hayward, and Markel, and Philly has Markel Phelps. Markel. So between the three of them, the three teams, they all had injuries that we don't really know how it's going to play out the next season. So to me right now, I think the top three seeds is a pick 'em. I really don't know who's the strongest and who's the weakest. I don't think there's going to be a lot that separates them in the regular season. I could really see seeds going down to the last week with the top three, but I definitely think those top three is going to be extended from the rest of the field. It's almost going to be like a chase pack when you watch like a 25K run, where you got a chase pack that's in front, and the rest of the field is behind, and you really don't know who's going to win that race until they hit the stadium, and they go into a full out sprint for like the last 300 meters. So seeding, I don't know. I don't really know who's going to be the strongest. I really think it's going to be a pick 'em. But in any token, I think it is an improved team. Even if they don't get 59 wins, I still think it's an improved team, because I think it's a team that's built better for the playoffs than what we currently had the year before.
I agree with that.
It's constructed for more of a long haul series run type of team, but I still think there are potential gaps with this team, like you said. I think the league is changing, but I think there could be some work with this roster on the big front. I think right now, if we're looking at a starting lineup, who plays the two? Because isn't Kawhi typically a three? Danny Green's typically a three. There's a couple questions I have. Not to say that it can't work. You know, you have a lot more length. But I'm just curious. I'm not saying that the talent's there. But I think there's more pieces to be made for this roster. If he's going to go for gusto, he got to go for gusto. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. There's still the contracts that are. What do we do with Norman Powell? Are we keeping him now? You know, I'd love to keep CJ Miles, but I think there's a logjam of three now.
Like Randall says, I honestly believe that there's more to be done. I really think Lowry is going to be dealt before. I actually have a theory that, especially if things are going well with Leonard, they're going to deal with him, and if he's on board to stay, they're going to try to build their own kind of big three in Toronto, and that's not going to include Lowry, even with or without. Even if they go into rebuilding, they're going to move him, and I think he's on the decline, and I think Van Fleet's on the rise, and I honestly think there's a good pack. There's a potential partner with the Suns, which would make sense for both teams, where he gets dealt. But Brandon, let me ask you, that trade scenario that you said about Ibaka, that was just jokes, right?
Yeah,
that wasn't real. Say that again.
That was just me messing around with the NBA trade machine.
Oh, okay, okay. I was about to say, but yeah, contracts like to me the worst contract is Powell. You're right. Last year I was like, we need to get rid of Powell because that contract's horrible. But now that Didi's gone, now that Green is only on a rental, we don't know necessarily what's going to happen with him. Now that we're in a new system with Nick Nurse, who knows? Maybe he might flourish again, right? So I'm not as concerned on his contract as I am with Serge Ibaka or Jonas, because when between the two of them, as you said, with this new NBA, I think both of them are fives. And if we want to get more time for Pascal, and I think they're going to have something like, you know, how Golden State has that death lineup where they got Iggy playing the three. I think OG, they can potentially do that with OG and stick OG at like at the four and do like another like death lineup kind of thing, right? In regards one of those two guys, because both those guys have a player's option next year, and there's more of a chance of Jonas, with him being only 25, declining it to get a big contract, as opposed to Serge, who's on the other side of his career, where he'll pick it up. So if we can somehow deal him, if we can get something out of it, or even if it's for some expiring, just to loosen up some minutes for some of the other players, I think that can work. But I do believe, just like Randall, that there's potentially still one or two more trades, if not between now and the season, but definitely before trade deadline, that would make a major impact on this team.
Okay. So let me, I'm just going to move it along a little bit quicker. So I'm going to ask certain questions here before I move to the winners and losers portion of the pod. In terms of the reputation, where does Masai fall? Do you think after the way the whole thing with DeRozan fell out, do you think it damaged his reputation, elevated it, or do you think it just stays the same?
I mean, you know, I think that you can't really ask that question until the season really starts. I say that because there's two sides to every story. You know, DeRozan's claiming that he was told in summer league that he wouldn't get traded. Masai's right. Saying, look, it's a matter of miscommunication. At the end of the day, when you break it all down, everybody, if they were in Masai's position and had this opportunity, would take this risk, right? I don't care if LeBron's gone or not. Like Hedley said, we've seen this show more than enough to know what the ending's going to be.
Yeah.
And with DeRozan, I still don't think that the core of DeRozan and Larry, that's quote-unquote all-star duo, could do anything but could be Boston at this point. I just don't think so. And Masai has to shake things up. You can't blame it all on Casey.
And honestly, like, let's reiterate again, the way that they fell apart against Cleveland, I mean, I don't think I can find enough words to tell you how despicable that destruction was, honestly speaking, because especially you look at it, what was Cleveland's record the rest of the playoffs? If you take away what they did to the Raptors, it was 8-10 versus everybody else in the playoffs between Indiana, between Boston, and between Golden State. They went 8-10 against everything else, but they swept the Raptors. The Raptors are the only team that made Cleveland look like it looked like the Golden State Warriors versus Concordia. Like, that's what it made it look like.
Not only swept, they lose by 30 in game four.
Yeah.
Yeah. They gave up. They gave up in game four. They conceded. What I wanted to say at the end of the day is, it's not like DeRozan got traded to like the doormat of the West.
I know.
I mean, he got traded to a great team. There's no taxes to hurt him as much as in Toronto. So he's in a great situation. He gets one of the best coaches in the history of the game, helping him take his game to the next level, if that's even possible. But what I wanted to get to at the end of the day for Masai is DeRozan now houses out. He looks now like the victim. He looks now like he has a chance to show everybody that, you know, he is that guy that can help carry the team. If he does that, power to him. But we didn't see it here in Toronto. And maybe in the regular season, and I even felt victim. You know, I know a bunch of times, Headley, you, Calvin, we had a conversation where I'm like, hey, man, I love this. I love this nucleus. I think this can grow. I think we need one more piece. I always said, if we had someone like a Marc Gasol, maybe this team is a contender. At the time, I'm saying, not now.
Right.
But now that we look at it, what is bloated contract, he is the only one of the only superstars in the league that's getting paid like that that does not yield any results in the postseason. Him and Jimmy Butler, they're both great players, and I would put Jimmy Butler ahead of DeRozan, so if that's the case, then we got to get rid of him, period. If he wasn't getting paid that money, then I would say, maybe let's try to ride with it, but he's not.
In this salary climate now, I mean, $27 million for your star player isn't exactly crippling you at the same time. So, but you know what I mean? But I know they want to get out of the contract of either Lowry or DeRozan, but $27 million for your star player it's not backbreaking. But sorry, to answer the question, Ellie, to what I was asking before, do you think Masai's reputation is damaged?
NBA players, if they have two teams, they're going to look at the two teams, who gives them the best money, which city they want to play on, which one has the roster that they want to play with. They might even look at mascots, acrobatics, before they're going to look at and say, well, MU traded DeMar DeRozan. Do I really want to go there? Like, to me, that is not at the forefront if the other things checked off on their list. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then I tell people all the time, like, look at Danny Green. Look at Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge traded his quote-unquote superstar after he came after a misdiagnosis, again, with his injury, after his sister passed away. After he rode his team where this guy actually produced it in the playoffs. But what happened? He had an opportunity to upgrade his team when another disgruntled NBA star out of nowhere after they had just won a championship 2 years prior went out of Cleveland. And he jumped at it to improve his team. It's the same thing here in Toronto. Let's talk about Kyrie after next year. He might opt out because he wants to team up with Butler. The point being is the same situation. I don't hear people talking about, you heard at the beginning, just like you're hearing at the beginning now with MU, but you don't hear people talking about it now. He still signed Hayward afterwards. But yeah, I understand that Hayward and Brad Stevens has a relationship. Brad Stevens, but at the end of the day, I think people are all up in arms now, but come next year, if there's players that wants to sign with Toronto, I don't really think the whole DeMar DeRozan being shipped out is really going to be people's minds.
Just to touch on what you said just before I guess I answer my own question, the Boston situation is similar, but the only difference is they had 2 years with Kawhi instead of 2 years with Kyrie as opposed to the rental year with Kawhi that the Raptors are going to have. And something we've always said, like, between the three of us, you know, we understand how it's hard for Toronto to attract free agents, no matter how great the city is. And in the last 5 years, they've become like a first-class, world-class organization. Masai's kind of changed the culture in a lot of ways. He's done a lot in 5 years. That's why, you know, what's the tagline in Masai We Trust, right? That's the whole tagline we use. But another tagline we've always used in the last few years when it comes to free agents, we look at it like this. You know, Toronto's a city that, obviously, especially at this age, NBA players know and they love. But for whatever reason, they want to date us. They especially want to sleep with us, but they don't want to marry us and take us home to moms, right? So that's like the biggest thing that I think Masai is kind of changing the perception of. He's trying to change it, and it's still hard because even after these 5 years, it's still hard to just get a meeting with a LeBron or a KD or, you know what I mean, or certain people when they come off the books. It's still hard to just outright sign somebody. You know, it's always has to be like Toronto's the only city or franchise in the NBA where they're the fourth biggest market in North America, yet the moves we have to make is like a small market team.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like that's like the biggest thing. So I think it kind of damages it. I wouldn't say it damages reputation, but I think the reputation did take somewhat of a body blow. It took a kidney shot, the way it was handled with DeRozan. Now, and I think it may cause a little bit further damage if Kawhi leaves. But again, like we all understand the gamble that Masai's taken. Like whether I hate it or whether I love the trade, the fact that he's swinging for the fence, how could you not help but like give him respect for at least swinging for the fence?
Well, I'll just say this real quick. I believe that Boston gave up a bigger package in order to get their star as opposed to what we did.
Yeah.
So yeah, they got 2 years as opposed to one. And then the other point that you were making in regards to the whole perception and so forth. We're forced in Toronto to make those, I guess, quote unquote, home run moves because they do treat it like a small market.
Right.
So it's not like he can rely on getting the free agents like LA can do and other people can do, so they don't have to swing the fences. You kind of have to get him in your system first, right? And when you talk about Leonard leaving, being a rental, that would have a different perception. It should be if he leaves for nothing. If we do a sign and trade, or if we do a trade at deadline and we still get assets at the end of the day, to me, it's still a win. It's still a win. So even if Leonard leaves, but we get something for the haul, it's still a win.
Now, who should feel more betrayed in 2018? DeMar DeRozan or Blake Griffin?
Blake. Absolutely. No question about it.
Yo, this guy went from having been able to possibly touch the Jenner Kardashian foundation of cash to basically living near 8 Mile. Just like that. In the middle of winter too. That's extremely harsh.
He got traded like 3 months after signing his contract.
and not just that, but they like you, well, we all heard the presentation. Like they had his jersey fall out of the rafters,
yeah.
The whole Hall of Fame thing. Like you're gonna be here forever, and then 3 months later, it's like go shovel snow in Detroit. Who, ironically enough, Casey now gets the coach. So you know. Good luck with that. So what happens to DeRozan's career now in San Antonio, in your opinion? So I guess to start with you, Ellie, what do you think is going to happen going forward now?
I'll tell you the truth. Like, you know, a lot of people are wondering like what Pop can get out of him and stuff like that.
Mm.
I think what Pops can do is maybe curtail to his strengths, maybe stronger than what Casey, cause you know me and what I thought about Casey and his coaching. So he might be able to curtail more to his strengths, but I think DeRozan is a player that DeRozan is going to be. I don't necessarily think he's going to be a lockdown defender. I don't necessarily think he's going to be a guy who is a consistent 3-point shooter. I think if anything, Pops would probably be the best coach who can elevate his strength and hide his weaknesses the best. So I still think he's going to have a strong career there. But the West is a harder conference.
Mm-hmm.
Him being, a likelihood all-star like he has been in years in the past in the East, it's going to be a little bit harder. And I don't know what's going to happen when how many more years does Aldridge have in his contract? Is this one more year? Oh, no, he re-signed, right?
Yeah, so I think he's got like 2 or 3 more years left.
Too. Okay, so, I mean, the team's still going to be, they're going to be competitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Him, personally, I don't necessarily think he's going to be any different of a player, but I think that possibly be able to mask his deficiencies and highlight his strengths probably better than what Toronto
did. What about you, Randall?
I'm in agreement with that. I think if anything, the first season, you'll see DeRozan I think it'll be, he's going to be put on kind of in the spotlight now. So, you know, rather than Toronto where everyone kind of expected DeRozan to do certain things, I think everything's going to be under the microscope. But I think he'll prove to be a player that we all know, but the rest of the world doesn't. So what I mean by that is I think that it's kind of addition by subtraction. So, like, everyone's going to be like, wow, DeRozan's so good. But we're going to be like, well, he's done the same thing when he's at Toronto. It's just that nobody really pays attention to Toronto. That's the problem.
True.
Yeah. So I think he'll fit within Pop's system. Pop wants to score. He doesn't need a defender. So he has a plan. And I think this fits Pop's vision as well. Like look, we all know Pop's not going to be coaching more than 2-3 years. When does DeMar's contract end?
Yeah.
So he's going to get the most out of this run with DeRozan. And I think it'll work out for him.
So I'll say this, just to touch on what you said, that was one of my main points with this. I think the reason why Popovich was asking for the world for everybody else was that he really didn't want, like, a prospect. You know what I mean? Because between his age and, you know, obviously his wife passing away, I don't think he's going to be coaching in the next 10 years, right? So, and I know for sure he does not want to go back to rebuilding. Like, he does not want to do that. So making this deal, getting an all-star, I think, in DeRozan, I think was a good get compared to, like, getting, like, a Brandon Ingram or a Kyle Kuzma, which, not saying those guys aren't going to be really good, but it's going to take years for them to see their potential. And is he going to want to wait for that? I'm not sure. You know what I mean? But I think DeRozan improves. There's definitely room for improvement on the defensive end. Like, I don't think he's James Harden on defense, but he, you know, he's, like, I would say slightly below average as a defender. And can he, you know, can he flip to that other side of the margin and be that guy where he's going to be Kawhi Leonard? No, nobody's expecting that. But I think defensively, I think being in Popovich's system and his schemes and understanding his coaching, plus DeRozan being open-minded, because every single year that guy improves his game, as we've seen for the last 9 years. He's always added something to his game every year. Unfortunately, he wasn't defensively, but every year he's always, you know, he's has an open mind to expanding his game. So I think putting him together with Popovich, I think that's only going to help him going forward. And he's 28 years old, right? 28, 29 years old. So he's right in the middle of his prime or entering his prime right now. So if there's anybody that can do it, listen, it's Popovich. Like, we talk about Danny Green. Danny Green, before he got to the Spurs, was literally heading out of the league. The only thing I knew about Danny Green was the guy. Remember, he was the guy that was doing all the dance moves with LeBron in the sidelines. Like, that's the only thing we knew about Danny Green for years on end. And now this guy, I think in 2013, he came, if the Spurs would have won, he might have won the finals MVP. You know what I mean? So so anybody that Popovich gets, and we've all seen it, where like, yeah, this player's so-and-so. And then when this player's whatever, we don't think he's that great. And then when Popovich gets him, you're like, ah, shit. You know, because you know he's gonna basically get the most out. He's gonna mine that diamond as best as possible. Like, and if he can't do it, it's almost like Belichick. Like, if they can't do it, then it's almost like nobody can do it. You know what I mean? So I think right there, between that, the fact that the Spurs won 47 games without Kawhi, and you got 9 games out of Kawhi, and now you're getting a healthy DeRozan for most of that season. I think I'm not saying they're gonna jump to 60 wins, but they're definitely gonna be a better team. And then going forward as well, with as I mentioned earlier, with Houston kind of taking a little bit of a dip, the Lakers getting LeBron, but they're not fully, you know, potentially where they want to be just yet, you know, in terms of getting like a second or a third star. And we saw the Western Conference last year. It was like Houston, Golden State, and then everybody else. So do you think San Antonio can kind of step out of that pile now and be maybe the second best team or the third best team in the West? Because I think they have a chance to at least be the second best team with this move. Possibly. Here's my final question before we get to the winners and losers of the offseason. Who do you think won the trade? Sarando, I'll start with you.
Right now, I think I said this before. I really think this is a win-win for both sides. You know, initially I would have said San Antonio. But I'll give the edge to the Raptors right now.
I would, if everything was on paper, you would think usually the guy who gets the best player wins, which is Toronto. But because this trade was done with so many kind of intangibles in terms of How healthy is he going to be? Is he going to be locked in to join in Toronto? Is he going to stay beyond 1 year? You know what I mean? When you look at all those other scenarios, to me, it falls down where now it's, as Pop said, I think this potentially has the opportunity where both teams wins. Mm-hmm. Who necessarily has got the best of it, I don't know as of yet. If, for some reason, if Leonard leaves and we don't get any pieces for it, then obviously it's Toronto. I mean, obviously it's San Antonio. Mm-hmm. However, if Leonard stays and long-term, or if we get pieces for that, I think Toronto wins. This needs to develop more. It needs to season more to really say who won off the bat. Mm-hmm. San Antonio, if this was a Leonard contract where he was coming off a great season, where he had the years left on his contract, and then they only got this haul for a top three player, they would definitely have been loser of the trade.
I think short term it's the Raptors. Long term, I don't think it could be answered until July 1st of next year. Mm-hmm. Everything literally hinges on what Kawhi wants to do next summer, and considering how he handled things these past few months, it's supremely risky. But the Spurs wanted an all-star in return. They got one in DeRozan. It could only help them, you know, be better. So the Spurs didn't exactly get fleeced in the deal. So in that case, I agree with both of you guys. Like, I think it's kind of like a win-win for both. But in the short term, it's the Raptors. But long term, we won't know until next July. All right. So this last part here of the podcast. So the second portion of this podcast is the winners and losers of the offseason. So I'm going to throw some names out at you guys. You tell me if they're the winner or the loser of the offseason. And just say state why. So the Los Angeles Lakers, winners or losers of the offseason?
I think they're losers. The reason for, oh, I mean,
okay.
Yeah, Bron went over there. Yes, I was one of the guys that thought that he was going to go to the Sixers. It's definitely a win in that situation. Paul George not joining him is definitely a blow. The team that they have going into the regular season is not the team that LA thought they were going to get with them bringing in LeBron. So that's why I say it's a loser, because when they brought in LeBron, I thought that team was going to be stacked, and it's not.
You don't think Beasley and Lance Stevenson, they weren't planning for those guys?
I don't think that was ever in their plans.
What about you, Randall?
I think they're a winner, and I'm going to put this very simple and plain why. Because at the end of the day, any move you make to make your team better is winning, right? Now, are they a championship team or contender? No. But I think they're positioning themselves to be maybe come trade deadline. Maybe they're not done anymore making moves. But I think that they, whatever moves, just getting LeBron alone is a win. And whether they did it or he did it on his own, it doesn't matter. The organization is better than it was yesterday. And that's what, to me, is the point of making moves.
Yeah, I think they're a winner as well, obviously, because they got LeBron James. Everything that you mentioned is what I agree with. But I'll add this, though. If they want Kawhi, I don't think Magic and them can basically rest easy. I thought about this the last couple of days, because I was kind of saying, like, man, I wouldn't trade my prospects for Kawhi. I'll just sit back and wait, knowing he wants to come here. But I think the biggest threat to Kawhi coming to L.A. isn't just Masai Ujiri using his charm and convincing him to stay. I think it's Jerry West, because he's in the Clippers organization. He's on the other side of the Staples Center. He's a legend on the court, on and off the court. And anytime he's interested in a player that you're interested in, you should be worried. Although Kawhi prefers to be a Laker, I think he's cool if he ends up with the Clippers. I don't think it's necessarily he wants to be a Laker. I think he just wants to be in LA. So Jerry West is the mogul, man. He's a front office mogul. So I don't think they don't look like they have a lot of assets yet, but man, just Magic should be looking over his shoulder, because I don't think that's going to go away just yet. Oklahoma City. Winners or losers of the offseason? Randall, you can go ahead.
Winners. I think that they did a good job of not bringing back Melo. I don't think he fit. And this is one of those moves where it's like where you get rid of something and it actually makes it better. Mm-hmm. Similar to that Rudy Gay trade the Raptors did. I think that, you know, You know, Melo was a ball stopper. We all know Melo's flaws. He didn't play deep. I'm not too sure. Even though I love Schroeder, I'm not sure how that fits with their team. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we'll have to wait and see. I never thought Westbrook was a quote unquote point guard. I like them better off, you know, off the ball. So maybe that adds some type of dynamic. Maybe Schroeder comes off the bench, kind of like an Oladipo type of position. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work, but I think that they'll be better. Now, are they going to be contenders? No. But I think they'll be in the top four in the West.
Yeah, OKC is definitely a winner. I thought for sure Paul George was out. There's no way I thought he was coming back. So the fact that they're able to re-sign him, and the fact that they're able to get some kind of asset for Melo, get out of that contract and save, I think I heard they saved about $60
million. $100 million in taxes.
It's $100 million that he saved?
$100 million, yeah.
Yeah, but they still kept short his contract, so it was a net. Yes, yeah, so like right. I read it was like a net $60 million that they saved, something like that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Anytime you can save $60 million and improve your team and keep one of the best two way players, when everybody and their mama thought he was going to leave and go back home, that's a definitely win for OKC.
I'm not totally stunned that Paul George decided to stay, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, only because when you heard him talk publicly, he had a lot of love for Westbrook. You know what I mean? Like I think he appreciated all the loyalty that Westbrook showed him. So I think OKC wins there, especially after what happened at that Utah series when Westbrook opted to go for the pass at the will offense and shoot 43 times in game six. If I was me, I'd run for the hills. But
that's what I'm saying. You know, I was like, who wants to play with Westbrook? I mean, I know he's a superstar, but that is a hard guy to play with.
I know, but the fact that he stayed, I'm not totally surprised, but it is shocking. Because even after that, like I said, I would have ran. One of the other things I kept saying too, especially after watching that game, is, man, you need to get like a Rondo type of a point guard to put alongside. Westbrook, especially, you know, in the fourth quarters and close games, just somebody that's out there that can make better decisions, you know, and is not like wrapped up in the emotions of it all the time. And I'm not sure if Schroeder is going to be that guy. I would have went after Rondo, like, you know, like with everything I had, because I think he would have been perfect. But, you know, Schroeder's not a bad get, you know, especially late in games. I don't think he's a bad get. Like, he's a good player. So let's see what happens with that. But I think him in the fourth quarter making certain decisions, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And then, of course, getting rid of Carmelo's contract, that's like a whole other thing. Milwaukee Bucks, winners or losers of the offseason?
I don't think Milwaukee did anything major.
They didn't do anything.
I would say losers. Because I think they're losers because every team in the, for the exception of Boston, seems like every team are trying to make some type of moves to be somewhat competitive, and they're banking on kind of what the Raptors did last year on internal growth, but I don't think they have the pieces to exponentially grow to be a contender, that type of contender in the league. I think they're still going to be stuck in that, you know, at anywhere between that 3-5 range.
I can't even think of really a move that they did other than getting a new coach. And I think the coach they got is definitely an upgrade from Jason Kidd. However, with Boston, Boston's going to be in the better next year just because Hayward is coming back. We already talked about Toronto and Philly. Those teams are getting better. You know what they're saying goes, if you're not improving, you're staying still, right?
Right.
And I feel like that's what Milwaukee's doing. They have not improved. And the thing is, I'm not too sure how many years. I think he has two more years left in his contract. Mm-hmm. Before the Greek Freak is a free agent.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, you know what? He's a small market type of guy, but that's what people thought about Kawhi Leonard as well, right? So if that team continues to stay packed and not necessarily deliver because the moves that they're doing has not worked out, and then for them to get absolutely nothing for Jabari Parker. Like, there was an article, I can't remember who posted it, talking about, you know, in recent years about top picks. How many top picks left and the team got nothing? And he was like, as a number two pick, it has not happened ever where a number two pick leaves an organization and they get absolutely nothing for it. I understand he had two ACL tears and whatnot, but we even got something for Bruno. right? So the fact that they got absolutely nothing for him, he walked for nothing. They've made no real legitimate moves other than a coaching change. Everybody else is getting better, and this is just another year that's willing off the contract of the Greek Freak where he becomes a free agent. They're a loser.
Yeah, and to add to that, they're a loser, and to me, that's the biggest reason. Jabari Parker, just the fact that you got nothing for him is ridiculous. Like, I think he needed to get a fresh start, so I think he, you know, like, because you drafted him to be that guy. Like, Giannis wasn't the guy that was supposed to be this player. It was supposed to be Jabari Parker. And then ended up being Giannis, and then with the ACL tears, all that stuff, you know, he kind of got tossed to the wayside a little bit. To me, looking at the deal, I would have kept him, but I understand he needed a fresh start. But the fact that you got nothing for him automatically makes you a loser. And then you replace him with Ersan Ilyasova. That to me is a loss right there, like, regardless of anything else. And you elevated the team in your division in the process in Chicago. Like, I think they're going to be better. And you know, I really love Wendell. I really liked Wendell Carter. Especially from what I saw him in the summer league a couple weeks back. So they're going to be an interesting team too. Two more names and then we'll wrap it up. Isaiah Thomas.
Oh man, that.
I don't think you've seen I joked that this guy went from a $200 million contract to $2 million contract.
Pulling the Brinks truck out to
exactly. Literally take out the piggy bank.
The Brinks truck could even back up the smart car to electric car to the Chevy Cruze could even back up the Chevy Cruze to the driveway now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for him in a way because I mean, injury and his personal life that kind of derailed and them getting traded like twice in a season, and he's an underdog. He was like the last pick, and then he came up to stardom, and now he's like right back. Like, he's had an up and down career.
Yeah.
Honestly, when I heard him going to Orlando, there was a possibility of him going to Orlando. I actually liked it for him because I felt Orlando gave him the opportunity to play more like how he played in Boston.
Right.
By him taking a backup role with Denver, I know he's going to his old coach and his familiarity there. But when you got guards like Harris and Jamal that's in front of him, to me, it's not. I don't know how much of a showcase he's going to be able to do in a 1 year at Denver as opposed to what they could have did at Orlando.
Yeah.
But Orlando apparently, for whatever reason, did not give him. They never offered him a contract, and they got. I think they went and got Rat from the Bulls, and that they'd rather do that than give him a 1 year deal, which that's kind of like yikes. So I honestly don't know. I don't know if his career. I think his career has definitely climaxed. And the deal, like his role that's going to be in Denver, I don't necessarily know if that's going to help him in anything for the next year.
What is Orlando doing? Don't they need a point guard? Like, what?
That's
doing?
What I'm saying. I thought for sure. I was like, this would have been perfect.
I don't understand.
I don't get it.
Yeah, like I said, he's never going to get the Brinks truck backed up to his driveway ever again. Between like I said, his height. Being that he's a 5'9", you know, at best, point guard, and with this hip surgery, that's you know, the players who've had it, it's a very serious surgery. I feel for him. I really do feel for him. You know, sometimes you don't feel like, he's a professional player. He's got millions of dollars, but he never banked out the way he should have banked out. You know what I mean? He never got that big contract to bank out. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel for him in that aspect.
He came off a $6 million contract. That's why I felt like if you're only going to take $2 million, you mean Orlando didn't offer him a vet in? But I'm saying, look, all you took was $2 million to be a backup. I would like...
Yeah, like
I don't know if money is what held it up, like, but... Because that would have been a whole lot better for him to showcase for the next year to at least maybe get in a contract that's like maybe in the $10 million or whatever the case may be. If he came back successful,
he couldn't get like a $5 million for the 1 year or $8 million for the 1 year. Like,
I know
it's crazy.
Yeah, but guys, it looked horrible in the last year. Like, horrible.
He can't
do anything else.
The last but not least, DeMarcus Cousins. Winner or loser of the offseason?
Winner. I think that he's put himself in a great position for rehab. Put himself on a team that he can win a championship with. Proved to everybody that he can work within that
team dynamic, and he doesn't have to be the focal guy because he only signed a 1 year, right?
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work out, if it works out, he can sign a big major deal. Everyone gets to see how he plays with, you know, within their system, and it gives him a chance. There's no pressure. I think there's nothing bad about this deal.
So I say it's a loser in a sense that it's kind of the whole season. The fact that he had a major injury, the fact that he has quote unquote bad attitude, the fact that he wasn't able to solidify a long term lucrative contract, it's a loser in that sense. But then for him to flip it and be like quote unquote ace of cards and get a 5.3 million exception with the best team in the league, where he can rehab the whole season, not have to worry about coming back early, and if he can show and prove in the playoffs, in that span, and help them come over the hump, it was the best situation for what was in front of him. Once it was seen that people were not going to take a risk on him on a long term back contract because of his injury.
Yeah, I think he's both a winner and a loser. I think the Achilles and the fact that he's been a head case for most of his career washed away any real offers. So, you know, and I feel for him too, because he was playing amazing before he got hurt. And right now he gets a chance to show that he's healthy and show that he can contain his emotions within a championship frame, right? So, like right now, Golden State's become an unbelievably highly emotional team. But you know, between Draymond, between what KD's turning into, and now DeMarcus Cousins, like that's going to be a volatile team on the court. But but you know what? But you know, again, I think they're still going to be fine. I think Steve Kerr is going to be able to still hold on the fort. So I think he's a winner just because all he has to do is show that he's healthy and show that he can behave himself. That's basically all he has to do. And then within the next year or two, he's going to get big money. But I think he might even stay maybe one more year. Possibly, mm-hmm. and then because after that he's gonna be able to get more money in 2020, and then on top of that he gets a couple of rings, so he knocks out of the way too.
Wow!
All right, fellas, thank you for coming on the podcast, man. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Calvin.
Thank you, man.
Thank you all for checking out the AV podcast today, and for lending me your ears. Special shout out goes out to Headley and Randall Walter for hopping on the podcast episode to break down the blockbuster trade between the San Antonio Spurs and the Toronto Raptors, as well as the winners and losers of the NBA offseason. That was definitely a lot of fun. Listen, man, the NBA has been a 12-month sport for a couple of years now, but this year was just another reminder of how this is the best sport in terms of controlling their offseason and keeping their names relevant and bubbling. It's super impressive. So kudos to the NBA for that. On another note, you can catch all of the South Sharaf episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. You can listen to all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. Make sure you subscribe to that, if not all of that, and to check out the Foundation website and to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows. Make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. Now, before I go, I didn't feel like it was right to end this podcast off without properly acknowledging the fact that DeMar DeRozan is gone from Toronto. Goodbyes are always hard, man. It's always hard. But you have to go through it as part of the grieving process. As this podcast is held in Toronto, I felt like it was necessary to have a proper goodbye being done by the Raptor resident of the South Shad family, a man who has professed his love time and time again, both on and off this podcast, for his Toronto Raptors, who supported them through some of their highs and all of their lows. A man by the name of Jules the Commish. So to end this podcast off, he's going to bring home the eulogy, the liquor pouring, if you will, of the Raptors' life and times of DeMar DeRozan. My name is Cal C.
Make me chuckle. Yeah. Make me cry, man. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's all good. It's all good. You know, you want the Kleenex? You want the Kleenex before we go?
Continue.
My name is Cal C. And you've just tuned into the AV podcast on South Shore AV Radio. Julian, take us away, brother.
Oh, man.
Let me just catch my breath right here for 1 second, man. Man, I don't know where to start, man. I need some background music. Play some Boyz II Men for me. Play some.
I got the church music rolling, man. Take him to church. Take him to church. Church.
DeMar, like everybody who was a Raptor fan, I don't think there's any debate, no argument that DeMar is the greatest Raptor in franchise history. I don't know what to say at this point. Like I was a mix. Like at the time of the trade, I can honestly say that I didn't like it. I'll be honest. I did not like it, and it was not just because I was a DeMar homer. I just didn't like the fact that we, as an organization, Masai, was taking the risk of bringing in a player that could be potentially a rental player and who hasn't played for the entire season, last season. And to trade for a player that hasn't played and I think more than likely will leave at the end of the season for your franchise greatest Raptor of all time, it actually hurt. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's just basketball. It's just sports, but it hurt me. It hurt me, but beyond being a DeMar fan. But anyhow, I want to say my goodbyes to DeMar. I gotten over you though. I gotten over you in 2 to 3 days after looking at the details and the potential plan A and B's if Leonard wanted to leave at the draft, I mean, at the trade deadline.
Damn, that's fast, boy.
What's that?
I said, damn, that's fast.
Yeah, man, it took me 2 days. 2 days to fully sit down and analyze the pros and cons of this deal. And I like the deal. I like the deal. And this is for anybody listening. I'm the biggest DeMar fan, biggest Raptor fan that has been on this podcast. In the long run, it's a much better deal than I had thought initially. So DeMar, I think DeMar's going to do well. I think he's going to do well in San Antonio under Pop. He fills a void for them at a two guard. He's another scorer for them, which they need. And I think he's going to do well. But it did hurt. And you know what hurt me most too, as well, along with the trade, is DeMar's reaction. His reaction. This guy made it hard for me to break up with him. He was like sending me PMs and private messages, kind of. It felt like that, like just give him another chance. And why it felt so hard to break up with him. He put the blacked out Instagram post, and oh man, it was just hard. It was just hard to see him hurt. see him get hurt like that. And for, you know, like he wanted to be here too, so that made it hard for me to accept too. A player that who's done so much for the franchise and has so many records and potential records to break, not wanting to leave to go to a tax-free state. So you could tell at this point it wasn't about money or anything else. This was his home. He was drafted by the team anyhow. He will be missed. I'm looking for a DeMar jersey. I think that's a jersey you can wear, man, next year, the year after, whenever. It will never be looked at like as a throwback or anything like that, or anything. Well, not right now, but it'll be accepted whoever you wear that jersey, unlike other players that have been traded. But hey, DeMar, you will be the greatest Raptor of all time, going forward and for years to come. You have, I this is me personally, I can't speak for anybody else, but he's above Vince Carter and VC. I'm not going to say for what he did for the city, but what he did for the franchise as a team. He was a player that got better every year. Even up, like, I don't know what year he's in, even up to last year, you showed to us that, you know, you cared for your craft, you cared for the team, you cared for the city, and you put in work. And I think as Toronto, the city and fans, that's what we admire or love about our teams and athletes. The players that actually put in the work and who thrive to try to get better. Maybe not necessarily get better, but the hard worker, hustler player. And he was that, man. Not on the defensive end. Sorry, DeMar, but who knows? The way that you got better every year, you might have gotten better defensively next year, too. So from all the fans, we we're going to miss you. We are going to wear your jersey. And I'm going to try to get tickets for that first game back when you come back. So, you're loved. That's okay. I'm going to start crying.
Amen, brother. Amen. Yeah.